This episode of Midori House was first broadcast on the 26th of December 2012 on Monocle 24. Midori House is brought to you in association with Moncler.
Hello and welcome to Midori House here on Monocle 24, coming to you live from St. Moritz with me, Tyler Brulé, and Sophie Grove. Coming up on tonight's show, the first in our special winter broadcasts.
We look to the Winter Olympics 2022 and discuss the prospects for St. Moritz and Davos should they win the bid to host the event, with communications director for the bid, Christian Gartman.
And our roving Alpine reporter Gillian Debias explores the first new five-star hotel in Stadt and finds out how the new Alpina development is reshaping Swiss hospitality for the modern traveller.
We were trying to create an hotel that fits really into the mountains. That was the philosophy.
And we'll take the temperature of St. Moritz's art and design community with the well-established and the up-and-coming ends of the cultural scale. Artist and businessman Rolf Sachs, designer Giovanna Lisognoli will be with us shortly.
All that and much more right here live from St. Moritz. This is Midori House on Monocle 24. And welcome to the center of St. Moritz. You're listening to Midori House with me, Tyler Brulé, and Sophie Grove. It's a chilly one here, but not too bad, is it?
It's brisk. It's wonderful. It's kind of, it makes you feel alive, yeah. This type of weather.
And we're in our little setup here. We're good for about four guests, and we're going to be having many guests up and coming over the next few days. And looking forward to, of course, all of our colleagues coming up as well. But before we wait for them and everything else on this program, we should go back to London to Bill Bingham with the news headlines.
Monocle 24 News, I'm Bill Bingham. The Indian government has appointed two committees promising to push for speedy trials of sexual assault cases and for stringent laws for all those convicted of such crimes. The announcement follows recent criticism of the government following the gang rape of a 23-year-old student while on a bus in the capital, Delhi, earlier this month. Thousands protested across the country to express their anger and disgust over the crime. One committee is charged with finding lasting solutions to the problem of women's safety. And as Finance Minister Palaniappan Chidambaram explains, the other committee will investigate the circumstances of the student's brutal rape. A young boy has been killed and several people injured by an explosion in a fireworks warehouse in Nigeria's capital, Lagos. Officials say the blaze on Lagos Island has spread to at least 9 buildings. Several have been destroyed. Ibrahim Farid Loye from the National Emergency Management Agency is in charge of the rescue operation.
The problem we are having, these buildings are stored with explosives, and we are hearing the sporadic shots in all these buildings. So that is the challenge we are having. It is very, very dangerous for firemen as well to go in, because the governor won't want to want any of his men to be injured. So we are still on ground fighting the fire, and we are preventing it from escalating to other buildings.
Activists have reported shelling in Syria's northern Raqqa province, which has killed up to 20 people, at least 8 of them children. The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights say the shelling hit the village of Al-Qatania. There's been increasing violence in the province in recent months as rebels launch attacks to seize several areas on the Turkish border. The head of Syria's military police has defected from the army and expressed support for the rebels opposing President Bashar al-Assad. In a video message, General Abdelaziz Yassim al-Shalal said he'd defected because the army had deviated from its primary duty of protecting the country and turned into gangs of killing and destruction. It's believed he's fled to Turkey. President Mohamed Morsi has congratulated Egyptians for endorsing a new constitution. In a TV address to the nation, Mr. Morsi called on them to work for stability and security, and urged those who'd opposed the constitution to join him in a national dialogue to tackle challenges ahead. Some 63% backed the constitution in the controversial referendum. Opponents say the document is too Islamist and betrays the revolution that overthrew Hosni Mubarak. At least 6 people have died after a major winter storm system swept through the southern United States, triggering tornadoes and heavy snowfall. Staff at the National Weather Service say a tornado struck Mobile, Alabama, a city with a population of about 200,000, Homes have been damaged and power lines and trees have been toppled. Memorial ceremonies for the victims of the 2004 tsunami have been held in the Thai tourist resort of Phuket. Light Up Phuket is an annual event on Patong Beach, where residents light candles to remember those who died 7 years ago when the tsunami took the lives of thousands in Thailand, including many tourists. Phuket's deputy governor presided over the ceremony, reminding visitors of the kindness of strangers during the devastation. And that's the latest news from Monocle 24.
Thanks very much for that, Bill. And sorry for a bit of a mogul start here, but you're with Tyler Brulé and Sophie Grove. We are sitting live, and we're coming to you from the center of Samaritz, just in front of Hauser Hotel. Sophie, you got off the train not even 2.5 hours ago. First impression so far?
It's incredible. We are in a raucous spot, it has to be said.
Yeah, maybe you should tell listeners what's happening, maybe just 20 metres in front of you.
It's definitely après-ski hour here in Zamorit, and it's a beautiful square, snow-covered, wonderful Christmas trees, twinkling lights, and then lots of revelers all standing around sort of wood-burning stoves, having their post-ski snifter.
Yeah, well, they're snifter, and I think we're sort of indulging in something which is somewhat the same, which we're having a very nice ginger punch right now.
It's rather different from the complete serenity of the train ride up here. That's like something out of another world. It's so wonderful.
These are largely ski instructors in front of us.
You say that disparagingly, Tyler.
No, not at all. But yeah, and always quite a large Aussie contingent here as well. Anyway, you're listening to Midori House. It is just 19:06 here in Samaritz. It's 13:06 in Washington, D.C. We're back in a moment.
London, New York, Tokyo. This is Monocle 24.
London, New York, Tokyo. Това е Monocle 24.
Londres, Nova York, Tokyo.
Londino, New York, Tokyo.
This is Monocle 24.
And you are back with Midori House with me, Tyler Brulé, and Sophie Grove. Now, I guess it's important to say that there was a couple of emails that came through probably over the last 24 to 48 hours, people concerned about where did their Midori House go and what happened to their briefing. But anyone who sort of has tuned in reasonably close to the website has probably seen that we've been very much on, I wouldn't call it stand-down mode, but most of our regular daily live programs have been off-air. And of course, we've been doing other programs like the Winter Series, but we are going to be coming from Samaritz twice a day. The briefing, of course, will be at midday London time tomorrow, like it always is, and of course Midori House will be here. The review is going to come here from this weekend as well, and then you're sticking around all the way through till New Year's Day as well.
Exactly. It's going to be an amazingly sort of snappy program from this wonderful chilly spot, but there's such an incredible sense of revelry here. It really is a kind of gathering point at this time of the year. It's wonderful to broadcast from here. Can you go from this sense in London where there's absolutely nothing going on to this this is where people have flocked to, frankly?
Well, it was funny because the city really, or the town, Samaritz, only came alive, I would say, probably in the last day and a half, because when I came up here on Saturday, it was really, really quite quiet. And then you just notice the traffic pouring in from Germany, from Italy, from elsewhere in Switzerland. And of course, we should point out as well that over the next few days, it's not just going to be you and me around the microphone. We have our very intrepid Marcus Hippie is coming down from the north of Finland. He's going to be around the microphone. Also, our Andrew Tuck, our editor, is also flying in from London. And then there's a team of course, relief producers and researchers and others coming in as well.
Exactly. I mean, actually, this is a wonderful opportunity to sort of get together and sort of bring Midori House off-piste, as it were. It's really quite sort of uncanny in many ways.
Well, and we've got a lot of activities planned. And one thing which we're looking forward to over the next couple of days, we want to take everybody sledding, which is going to be, I think, quite an event. I think we have to probably do it two times. And then aside from that, I mean, we've got a real fantastic lineup of really the great and the good. And as we said in the lineup of the program, Rolf Sachs is going to be here a little bit later on today. But we've also got Monica and Philomena from the Spruthmagers Gallery. Gallerists out of Berlin. Thomas Demand is going to be here. We also have the CEO of Victorinox, Carl Elsner is going to be here, Luca Bassani, the founder of Wally Yachts. These are all locals, and there's probably a lot of other people that we could go and scare up out of their villas as well.
I know, there's going to be lots of taking our mics out into the field, into the snowy field. We're going to go on a bit of a gastronomic tour tomorrow. There's so much to report on too, so we're going to be local, but it's really fascinating. And I'm quite excited about the tobogganing.
Absolutely.
And frightened.
And on a bit of a, a somewhat athletic note, we should say as well that when we come back in a moment, as you said in the queue and relining the program up, the 2022 Olympics might potentially be held in St. Moritz and also co-hosted as well by Davos. We are going to be talking to the communications director for the bid in a moment. You're listening to Midori House. We're live in St. Moritz. We're back in a moment.
During snowy December, Midori House is brought to you by Montclair. And from December the 27th to January the 2nd, we'll be heading off piste to broadcast the briefing in Midori House live from St. Moritz. Montclair, keeping the slopes stylish and warm since 1952.
Whether you're looking for gift ideas, clothing, or something for the home, we can help. Monocle has a selection of beautifully appointed shops in New York, London, Tokyo, Hong Kong, and our latest edition in College Street, Toronto. Scarves by Drake, wallets by Ettinger, and wine cups by Hakkisan are just a small selection of Monocle's collaborations with designers from around the world. Plus, if you've got any gaps in your collection of Monocle back issues, well, we can help with that too. So do pop in and say hello at any of our Monocle shops.
And you're back with Midori House, live in St. Moritz with Tyler Brulé and Sophie Grove. It is just 3:11 in the morning if you're listening in Tokyo, 19:11 here in Switzerland, 18:11 in London. It is 13:12 if you are listening on the North American East Coast. Well, in July 2015, the International Olympics Committee will decide who will host the Winter Olympics for 2022, an event that will either reaffirm the host nation's ability to produce high-quality winter sports entertainment to an audience of media, delegates, and fans, or it will shine a light on a host whose potential had until then gone unfulfilled.
The longer-term economic benefits are well documented, and when a weak Euro diverts attention from other alpine destinations, the Games could give that boost to locations such as the Swiss Alps that they unsurprisingly crave. In the running for the selection, the team behind the St. Moritz and Davos bid are hard at work carving out why their resorts could provide something different to the recent Winter Olympics.
Christian Gartman, Communications Director for the Association of the 24th Olympic Winter Games Grisons 2022 bid, joins us now to explain how important the Games can be. Good evening and welcome.
Hello, good evening. Thanks for having me.
First, tell us about this. Do you have any idea right now who the other contenders are already for 2022, or could other people still throw their hat in the ring?
Well, they can. They can until 1 year from now, when the potential bidders should have their application sent to the IOC. We're talking about Oslo in Norway. We're talking about Lille in Ukraine. We're talking about Barcelona in Spain, and probably Munich in Germany.
Right. And what's interesting about this is the fact that it's St. Moritz, a city, of course, or a town, or a dorf, which, of course, has hosted the Olympics before. But what we've seen of late, Mr. Gartman, it's been, you know, largely big cities. And, you know, we've had the likes of Vancouver, and I think of Salt Lake City. It's always been attached to cities because of infrastructure. Do you think there's a feeling on the part of the IOC that maybe the Olympics need to become more cozy again? They need to also go to a place with built-in infrastructure from a sustainability point of view. What is the mood in Lausanne?
Well, actually, we do have positive signs from the IOC that they are interested in seeing a different concept. Not to prove others wrong, but to see a concept that could work in a smaller nation like Switzerland and has not these huge cities as London or you mentioned others that have held the Winter Games. So we're pretty positive that they will definitely look at our concept and give us a good chance.
And what, in terms of infrastructure, would you really need to do here? I mean, there is so much here already, and we mentioned the the 1948 Winter Olympics is such a different game, really, in many ways. Can you talk numbers? Can you talk sort of projects that you're presenting to the IOC in this bid?
Well, absolutely. The games in 48 have been totally different from the games that we will be holding in 2022, probably here in Samaritz. But some of the sports infrastructure that has been built there and has been used there is still in use, as the Bob Run, where Bob was invented, is still in use, and parts of the ski slope they used will be used in 2022 still. We do have a jumping hill that is has not been in use for a few years, but we had it in use for over 80 years. So there are actual monuments of sports here in Samaritz as well as in Davos, two of the towns where winter sports have started in Europe, and we would like to use most of the infrastructure that is already there, though there will be infrastructure that will have to be built temporarily, such as a speed skating hall in Davos or a second ice hockey hall in Davos, and a few other things. But mainly the basics for the whole sports events are already here. We have to renovate them, make them new and probably a bit bigger, but then we will have them to use for another 80 or 100 years.
And in terms of Davos, I mean, they have so much capacity. You know, they host so many summits and so many sort of world events anyway. Do you think that that sort of is really useful to you when you're presenting this bid?
Absolutely. The Olympic Games is part of a bigger program for us, or a bigger project that should last not only 2 weeks, as the Games do, but two decades, to develop our infrastructure, the quality of our infrastructure, the quality of our traffic infrastructure, for example. That would help us a lot in the next 30, 40 years in this canton, in this region of Switzerland.
I mean, we hear a lot about legacy, and legacy is such an enormous component for bids these days. So does that mean, and it's one of the things as a part-time resident here, I always think that there's enormous potential to really go 12 months a year. Would that be sort of part of the legacy as well, to address a lot of the social issues? Because that was such a big part of, you know, what was discussed, obviously, in the run-up to London, during London, and now, of course, the very hot topic, what happens at this point?
Well, the two seasons, or the two main seasons, winter and summer, are totally different. But of course, the legacy in a marketing view, in a promotion view of Olympic Games, would also pay off in summer. Mm. But mainly, we are trying to reinvest in the winter season and winter sports, because there are so many million people around Europe, but even in Switzerland, they don't go in the snow anymore, and it's so nice to be here in the real winter. We want to put winter back into the Winter Games and bring the games up to the mountains, and that's why we call them the Snow White Games.
Now, I just wanted to clarify, because Samaritz will be, should the bid come off, and best of luck with it, so it would be Samaritz 2022, but absolutely, you would have a co-host in the form of Davos. But you also talk about it being sort of a Grison Graubünden Olympics as well. Where else would you see events happening potentially?
Most of the events, or almost all the events, will be in Davos and in Samaritz themselves. But we will have a curling site in Klosters, and we will have the biathlon sites on the Lenzerheide, which is close by. And in the two villages of Davos and in Switzerland, we will have two Olympic villages where the athletes will live.
And do you think that there's any risk that you might, overdevelop this area? There is such an amazing sense of balance here, and the Swiss are famous for that sense of conservation of the landscape. Do you think that the corporate nature of the Olympics could spoil this area?
The conservation of the landscape and of the beautiful nature we have here is a key issue, of course, in all the discussions that are going on. We will conserve this surrounding here in Switzerland that is so important for us, of course. We will not build new sports sites on new land that hasn't been used for sports yet. We will go into existing infrastructure wherever we can, and there is only a little part of the infrastructure we have to build new, and it will mostly be built temporarily and then demounted and brought to other sites, such as, for example, the basketball hall in London will be moved to Rio in 2016. And these concepts are not new, but they're essential for the sustainability of the Games.
Now, you could be just a little bit cynical when one thinks about Sochi and how we're sort of looking at what's happening there, the challenges of developing, you know, summer, which, you know, many have said is really not a Winter Olympics destination, question mark over Pyeongchang, and of course just all of the checkbooks that, you know, some will allude go with winning this bid. What do you really need to make sure that you get everybody on side? And I'm sure that, of course, the IOC is a big international committee. You know, nevertheless, it probably helps that Lausanne is just down the street from here as well. But you know, where would you say that the IOC, in a contemporary sense, are really looking for someone to deliver, you know, three or four main things? You know, what would they be right now in a changed modern Olympiad?
I would say that the most important part of our concept is that we don't go to a big city. We are in two relatively small towns, and we are trying to bring the winter back into this this concept, showing the people around the world how winter looks, because people don't know how it looks yet, probably from pictures. But even the sports, the athletes that are going indoors for their disciplines, such as ice hockey or speed skating, that usually are just in gray towns where winter is far away, they would see and feel the winter. And with them, all the media representatives that are reporting back home and will tell people how nice it is. And this is basically our marketing goal, to show people how Switzerland looks and how the winter in Switzerland, in St. Moritz and Davos looks, how beautiful it is. And what you have seen during this day, all the billions of people can see around the world.
It's certainly staggering in terms of its natural assets. But I mean, we've just had the Olympics in London, and that was largely won on the people, really, getting behind the Olympics, that kind of spirit of the Olympics. Do you think that you have the mandate here of the locals? Do you think people will volunteer and really throw their weight behind this bid?
We are working hard on that, and there are discussions going on, as we will have a referendum under the bid on the 3rd of March next year, and so the political discussion is going on. I've been spending 3 weeks in London during the Games this summer, and these were some of the most beautiful weeks I've spent, because London was so friendly and it was so helpful, and from the volunteer to the elite policeman, everyone was happy to have me there in this town, or at least they gave me the feeling, and I really thought this is something that we can learn from you guys in London.
Mm. And just before we go, do you think that there is that spirit here as well? Because oftentimes people say they've got it so good up in the mountains that you know, people are able to sort of feast in the summer and winter seasons, and yeah, maybe people have become a little bit comfortable in Graubünden. Has that mood changed as travel patterns have shifted? People are, of course, attracted to new resorts. What's your view?
I think you're perfectly right there. We have become a bit too comfortable here, and it has been working fine for us for the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years. But people start to think about that and have seen that with the shift in the exchange rate between the Swiss franc and the euro and the pound, we have become a bit... We are facing a crisis actually now. The winter has started beautifully here, but the times have become tougher and tougher, and people are realizing this and are more open for a new project such as 2022.
Great. Christian Gartman, Communications Director for the Association of the 24th Olympic Winter Games Grisons 2022 bid. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to Midori House live from St. Moritz in Switzerland. We'll be back in a moment to take a tour around the first new five-star hotel in Gstaad.
And you're listening to Midori House, where it is just 19:23 here in St. Moritz. It is 13:23 in Washington, D.C. Now, 15 years in development and much anticipated, the Alpina Hotel is the first new five-star luxury hotel to be built in the exclusive resort of Gstaad.
Privately owned, this hotel promises to reimagine the Swiss chalet experience for the contemporary traveller. With the first fires crackling in the hearth, Julian de Byers took a tour of the property and talked with the principal players behind its launch.
Gleis 8, Regio Express nach Gstaad, Châteauville, Montbron, Montreux, Abfahrt, 16:20.
The vintage train that winds its way up the mountain to Gstaad is fittingly nostalgic. Set in some of the most spectacular beautiful scenery Switzerland has to offer, Gstaad has managed to hold on to the old-world glamour it became famous for since the iconic Palace Hotel first opened its doors in 1913.
Hotel de Alpine Gstaad, Andrea Kaufmann, guten Tag.
Now, 100 years later, the Alpina Hotel hopes to carry on the tradition of mountain luxury. With a nod to the past and a view to the future, the owners have set out to create an idyllic Swiss mountain experience, as Ono Portier, managing partner and special advisor, explains.
We were trying to create a hotel that fits really into the mountains. That was the philosophy, to create a hotel that is warm, it's cozy. We used a lot of specific things what we find in the mountains. We used cow leather because we have so many cows. We have cowbells used as bedside lamps. All these little touches that gives us really that feeling you really are in the mountains.
This experience starts with the entrance, a chiseled tunnel built through the mountain that creates a sense of drama worthy of a James Bond movie. The architect firm responsible for realizing this ambitious €250 million project is Yagi and Partner. Based in Gstaad, they have years of experience in the region and understand the sensibilities unique to this exclusive pocket of Switzerland. Elisabeth Wampfler headed up the project.
Every building in Gstaad is built in wood, and that was the most important material. And then it was a big question how this wood will be treated, and the decision was to take an old pine wood. That's what is the most used wood here in Gstaad, I would say responsible for the cozy mountain style what we have now. And the other material is the natural stone. We have two different stones. The natural stone coming from Rinkenberg, that's 1 hour from here, so it's very close, and there is just one mountain where we can take this stone. And the other stone is the stone we used for the fireplaces. That's the Turbach stone. That's a very small valley. You can see it from the hotel. And they took these big stones in the river of this valley. Our client always, he asked us to do a hotel which could not be in New York, for instance. He wanted a hotel in Gstaad. So I think, again, the local materials are very important for this feeling, and also the how we work with the materials. And also the interior architecture was done like a living room, not like a hotel, but like a living room. It could be your private living room.
The interior design was the responsibility of Hirschbender Associates, world specialists in the luxury hotel experience. And as with every project they work on, site-specific cultures and traditions helped inform their narrative, as Nathan Hutchins explains.
So one of the things that strikes you when you first arrive there is the connection with nature. You still have the old chalets, the old farmhouses, the old barns, and that has a very strong influence on the local aesthetic of the place, as well as the daily life. They still have celebrations around when the cows come down from the mountains. And there's a lot of legend in Gstaad. There is the legend that on God's final day, he laid down his hand, and that's what the spaces between his fingers is what created the peaks to the south of the site. And what's important for us is always to sort of weave in a bit of a story that can help influence the design. What's important for us is to create projects that are unique, that are special, and that hopefully will be relevant for many years. At the top end of the market, what we see, it's not always bling and being loud and being overly ostentatious. It's really about detail. It's about craft. And it's about refinement. And that's why I think with a property like the Alpina, which is quite rustic, you can mix the luxury in through the smaller details, through stitching details, through linen and wool and leather, and all of these very tactile elements that you brought up before. So it's not shiny and loud. It's like a beautiful handmade pair of shoes that you have and that you love and that you kind of break in and wear over time. And we're hoping that's how this hotel evolves.
Luxury is many things to many people, but for hoteliers opening up new properties, understanding the equation will inevitably be the secret of success. Ono Portier again.
I think there are three main issues nowadays with this luxury. Luxury is time, luxury is space, luxury is authenticity. There is no problem in spending money. There is, fortunately, there's a group of people in the world who can afford this. But the people are prepared to pay as long as it is real. And that it's reliable, that you have a team in the hotel who can provide you that service that you're looking for. That, you know, the best service is the service is not noticed. And that is not a cliche, but it is exactly what it is. It's small things that comes back to the tradition. So, and I think that is very important that we have that. And people, we should keep that. Because otherwise we have nothing to share to the younger generation.
Ono Portier finishing that report there.
In the next half hour here on Midori House, we're going to sit down with the great and the good of Samaritz's cultural community. We'll be joined by the esteemed artist and designer Rolf Sachs and see how one Samaritz resident is attempting to reconnect local tradition with international design. But first, it is back to London to Bill Bingham with the news headlines.
The Indian government has appointed two committees promising to push for speedy trials of sexual assault cases and for stringent laws for all those convicted of such crimes. The announcement follows recent criticism of the government following the gang rape of a 23-year-old student while on a bus in the capital, Delhi, earlier this month. One committee will examine the circumstances of the student's rape, and the other is charged with finding lasting solutions to the problem of women's safety. A young boy has been killed and several people injured by an explosion in a fireworks warehouse in Nigeria's capital, Lagos. Officials say the blaze on Lagos Island has spread to at least 9 buildings. Several have been destroyed. Activists have reported shelling in Syria's northern Raqqa province that's killed up to 20 people, at least 8 of them children. The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says the shelling hit the village of Al-Qatania. There's been increasing violence in the province in recent months as rebels launch attacks to seize several areas on the Turkish border. The head of Syria's military police has defected from the army and expressed his support for the rebels opposing President Bashar al-Assad. In a video message, General Abdelaziz Yassim al-Shalal said he defected because the army had deviated from its primary duty of protecting the country and turned into gangs of killing and destruction. President Mohamed Morsi has congratulated Egyptians for endorsing his new constitution. In a TV address to the nation, Mr. Morsi called on them to work for stability and security and urged those who oppose the constitution to join him in a national dialogue to tackle the challenges ahead. At least 6 people have died after a major winter storm system swept through the southern United States, triggering tornadoes and heavy snowfall. Staff at the National Weather Service say a tornado struck Mobile, Alabama, a city with a population of about 200,000. Memorial ceremonies for the victims of the 2004 tsunami have been held in the Thai tourist resort of Phuket. Light Up Phuket is an annual event on Patong Beach, where residents light candles to remember those who died 7 years ago when the tsunami took the lives of thousands in Thailand, including many tourists. And those are the latest headlines from Monocle 24.
Thank you very much, Bill. This is Midori House on Monocle 24. We're coming to you live from Samaritz in Switzerland. Now, the Stabel, the archetypal alpine chair that has been in use in the Engadine for generations, is the focus of a new design project by the London Samaritz team Happen Project that marries the local traditional design archetypes with movements in the international design sphere.
The Neu Vertraut project, which translates as the new and the familiar, goes live in Samaritz in early February. And Giovanna Nesagnoli, founder of the Happen project, happens to be with us right now. Good evening and welcome.
Hello.
Maybe just to start, if you could just tell us about the nature of this. You're from Samaritz originally, but obviously based in a design hub like London. Where did the desire to do this? And maybe also define the Stabel for us. Everyone's got sort of visions of different alpine furniture, but maybe you can paint a picture for us.
Okay. The Stabelle is a wooden chair, made usually of this, our local alpine wood, and has this kind of very traditional construction, which is a construction which is done with wedges and wedged in, so it's kind of survived centuries, and it still remained the same throughout the centuries. So, and it's this chabelle is usually decorated, I mean decorated is probably the wrong word, but decorated and with wood carvings and all sorts of detailed crafts, and are really very sought after object.
And was the notion to, I guess on one side, to make sure that you're preserving the woodcraft and heritage. I mean, I think many people who spend time in St. Moritz would almost think you don't have to actually maintain the wood heritage, because when you work with Swiss builders compared to, let's say, builders in USA or the UK, you think that they definitely still know what to do with wood in Switzerland. But was the other side of it as well more to, yeah, make more of just a cultural and art happening? What was the inspiration?
The inspiration of it was kind of introducing contemporary design in this environment in St. Moritz, which is at the moment is kind of lacking, and lacking discipline, and using an archetypical, a traditional item to make it more accessible for people. So we are not, our project is not about preserving this chair or this craft. Our project is we're using the chair as an interface and an interaction point to showcase what design is capable of.
And tell us about some of those sort of interventions and the designers that you sort of introduced to the chabelle and what they made of it from their sort of contemporary perspective. How did you sort of show them the kind of cultural, social significance of the chair?
We've actually sent an actual chair to studios, design studios in London, and we asked 5 design studios to participate. We sent them the chabelle, and they are just creating an intervention with the actual chair. So we want to give them the chabelle without the context of Engadine or St. Moritz, but just ask them to evaluate the social, formal, and cultural space that such a chair can have.
Are you surprised by any of the reactions that you got from those designers?
Well, they're all very willing to collaborate, and they're all absolutely fascinated about that chair, that in a very soft wood that smells in a certain way. It has this archetypal construction. So they're all really willing to do something. And the exhibition is going to open in February, so I won't reveal the interventions.
Giovanna, tell me, when you see the chair, you've given all of these design studios not just a template to work with, but you've actually given them a real chabelle. They haven't been able to say that they want to go and make one in Brazil or something like that. No. You've actually given them the raw materials to start with.
Yes.
And the craftsman that you're working with, where is the chabelle Meister? Where are they based?
Well, that's a tricky question, because this project is relies on sponsorship. Therefore, we had to find rather cheap way to find a chabelle. So the chabelle, they are produced in Italy, actually, which is not a very good sign for the Engadine. But they're produced in Italy in their raw shapes. And then they usually get sent to Engadine, and the craftsmen here, do the wood carving and elaborate more on the overall shape.
And the starting point is here in February, and then is the idea that this potentially this chabelle feet then start to walk around the world and this goes elsewhere. What is the ambition for it?
The ambition for it is really to create collaborations between local business, local craftsmen, and international designers. And I think there is a great potential in St. Moritz and Engadine to do that, and to do more bespoke works that combine the international and the local. And of course, the chabelle could go. We'd love to show them somewhere else.
And what does this chair mean to you? I mean, it has such social significance. I wondered, can you just convey to us really what that means in terms of your own personal experience with this chabelle?
It means rootedness. To me, it means rootedness. It's not something I would have necessarily in my house in London, but I would coming back and seeing the chair, it means being home, belonging, being rooted to a place. And I think that happens to many people, even visitors who come here and want to buy this chair, want to have a chair like that, to kind of as symbol of belonging.
Mm. Just before we go, I wanted to know, when you think of this chair and then also the Samaritz cultural scene, there's so much focus on, classical music, and there's a lot of focus on gourmet, and many would say that it's a little bit too shiki-miki sometimes and is not part of where cultural movements have gone elsewhere in the world, and even other parts of Switzerland. When you think of interventions, was that also part of your intervention to shake things up here a little bit?
Absolutely. I think it really needs a new, something new, fresh, and something that plays with that overlap of local and international, rather than just having too many influences coming from outside. Mm. And I think that is definitely, our aim is to shake it up. And we're also doing taking over an old workshop in Samaritz and gonna refurbish it and create an installation design for this exhibition.
And maybe bring the Stabella production back home.
I don't know. I'm not sure about mass production, but...
Oh, didn't say mass production. Just production. Exactly.
Good. That's good, yes.
Giovanna Lisignoli from Happen Projects and the Stabella Project, which kicks off in February. Thanks very much for joining us. You're listening to Midori House here on Monocle 24. It is just 1940 here in Samaritz in Switzerland, 1840 in London. It's 1340 in Washington, D.C. We're going away for a short break. We'll be back after this.
I really can't stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
To go away.
Oh, baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has
been hoping that you drop
so
in.
Very nice.
I'll hold your hands, they're just like
your
ice.
Mother will start to worry.
Beautiful, watch your hurry.
Father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to that fireplace
so
roar.
Really, I'd better scurry.
Oh, beautiful, please don't hurry.
Just a half
Why
a drink
don't
more?
You put some records on while I pour?
The neighbors might think.
Oh, baby, it's bad out there.
Say, what's in this drink?
But there's no cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew how.
Your eyes are like starlight.
To break this spell.
I'll take your hat. Your hair looks swell.
I ought to say no, no, no,
Mind
sir.
If I move a little
At
close.
Least there will be, but I tried.
What's the sense of hurting my pride?
I really can't stay.
Baby, don't hold out.
Oh, but it's cold
cold outside.
The answer is no.
You know it's cold outside.
This welcome has been.
I'm lucky that you dropped
so
in.
So nice and warm.
Look out the window at that storm.
My sister will be suspicious.
Oh, your lips look delicious.
My brother will be there at the door.
Like waves upon a tropical shore.
My maiden man smile is vicious.
Lips are delicious.
Or maybe just a cigarette more.
There was such a blizzard.
I've got to go home.
Oh, baby, you would freeze out there.
Say, lend me a coat.
You know it's up to your knees out there.
You've really been grand.
I swear when you
but
touch my hand.
Don't you see?
Make it my life, your soul.
There will be plenty in
play. If you call me more.
And that was Tom Jones and Keris Matthews there. You're listening to Midori House live from St Moritz. We'll be back right after this to welcome a very special guest to the studio. Stay tuned for more on the cultural life in St Moritz. We'll be talking to Rolf Sachs.
During snowy December, Midori House is brought to you by Montclair. And from December the 27th to January the 2nd, we'll be heading off piste to broadcast the briefing in Midori House live from St Moritz. Montclair, keeping the slopes stylish and warm since 1952.
Before you set off on your travels this winter season, don't forget to pick up your issue of Monocle's winter newspaper, Monocle Alpino. We get cold weather combat training from Japan's elite snow patrols. We look at how Iceland has picked itself up and dusted itself off after a nasty wipeout. And we find the comfortable alpine retreats that will have you packing your bags and heading for the hills. Plus, we look at winter warming fashion ideas with all of the trimmings, including Bavarian lederhosen. That's all in the current issue of Monocle Alpino. Prost und zum Wohl!
And you're back with Midori House with Tyler Brulé and Sophie Grove. It's just 3:46 in the morning in Tokyo. It is 1946 here in St Moritz, 1846 in London, 1346 in Washington, D.C. Well, from the perhaps lesser known cultural movements in St Moritz to the renowned artist and designer and Engadine resident, I sometimes call him the unofficial mayor of St Moritz as well, Mr. Rolf Sachs.
Rolf has been at the forefront of the design and art world for decades, crossing disciplines from furniture and interior design to debuting his own design prowess in the Monte Carlo opera and ballets. Once noted for his purest minimalist constructions, his work has become more experimental over time. And he joins us now. Welcome to the
Very
square.
And this, we're tent, in this grind. Sophie earlier said it's sort of a studio. It's a studio kind of without walls. It's kind of almost if you would fashion a studio, maybe, Rolf.
Not quite yet. I want to welcome all the readers here too. I don't know, now we have -6 degrees centigrade.
It's going to be interesting to see how this evolves. I was looking at the Engadine forecast and it shows that in the coming nights it might go down to about 14 or something, so we might need more fortification than maybe just the ginger schnapps that we're having. Anyway, we should say zum Wohl.
So, zum Wohl.
Yeah, a belated Merry Christmas.
Cheers, everybody.
I just wanted to, and that's why we saved maximum time for you at the end of the program. And, you know, we started by talking, of course, to Mr. Gartman about the Olympic bid and then just talking to Giovanna about her projects. You know, for people who are listening around the world, they might be sitting in Sydney, they might be on the U.S. West Coast right now. Rolf Semmeritz has conjured up so many images, some right, some wrong, some by, you know, its own design. Where do you think this town sits right now, both from a sporting point of view, culturally? What is its role at the moment, do you think?
I think St. Moritz probably, you know, is one of the 2-3 most known stations in the world. And, of course, it was really put on the map by the Brits already in the 19th century, who really started here the Cresta Run and the Bob Run, which were sort of the first real winter sports, which one knows. The only other one, which is not really a sport but more of a game, is curling. So here in St. Moritz, it's also at the Cresta Run, the famous Grand National Cup, which is, I think, the oldest winter sports trophy in the world. So it is the sort of cradle of winter sports. And with that, it has kept a fantastic spirit, which is quite unique, which I don't think you find in any other station, really. Of course, occasionally this is also, I wouldn't say overshadowed, but let's say over-glitzed, yeah, by the more bling, yeah, people who come and visit St. Moritz very often only for the day to be sort of part of the scene, yeah, but who are not really the old guard, which keeps let's say the spirits up in this wonderful town.
We should say you are the old guard and sort of the guardian of St Moritz in many ways. I wondered, in your own work, which has been, you know, so diverse, has this place inspired you much in sort of, you know, even just for your artwork?
Of course it has inspired me. I spent my youth here, and especially this summer I had an exhibition here down in a gallery down the valley, which was all inspired from this valley and from Alpine culture. It was called Herzschuss, which means shot to the heart. And that was a little bit a double-sided meaning. What I did is you have the famous chair, which everybody in the world, even in Tokyo or Sydney or New York, have seen the famous Alpine chairs, which have the little heart in the back. And a little bit ironically, I made one a very contemporary of these chairs and had the shooting clubs here from the valley, and each village has one, shoot out the heart in the back of the chair. So that was...
vicious.
Yeah. So that was, you know, one of the pieces I did, which was, of course, inspired from here. But you have this sort of very austere sort of surroundings. And this is something, if you are creative, this will obviously influence you in your work.
I mean, Rob, we've chatted before about the crossroads that this town or village, however Samaritz classifies itself. You know, on one side you have the Olympic bid, but you also have so much international competition right now in terms of, you know, other resorts. Good or bad, but there's always, you know, someone who can maybe put you in the shadow. You've got, of course, you talk about sort of the old guard on one side who want to preserve the traditions, and then you have, of course, you know, new people who come in, and there's necessary capital which needs to come in to this market as well. Do you think that the old guard, their children, the next generation, that there is a new spirit of blood? I mean, it's interesting talking about Giovanna's project, for example. Are there enough of these things going on? Or again, as I was asking Mr. Gartman earlier, are people maybe a little bit too comfortable because times are largely good up here? I mean, people have it pretty good in Switzerland.
Absolutely. There's one thing I think that St. Moritz has the great luck, that it has not only the old guard, it has an old... families which belong to the old guard, and the children of these families will always continue the tradition which their fathers, grandfathers, or even great-grandfathers started. And that is something wonderful to see. And especially today, we were up on the mountain and we were all the adults there, and the next door table, I think we had a table of something like 20 youngsters. Yeah, who were all preparing. Tomorrow we're doing the ski race, and after tomorrow we're doing the Kressler race. Yeah, and then next week we're going to go bobbing. So it is a fantastic spirit, unique, which you won't find anywhere else.
Mm. I'm interested, because we've been talking about the Olympics quite a lot on the show, you've been quite important in restoring the Olympic heritage that you have here in Samaritz. Some amazing Bauhaus international style buildings that aren't really synonymous with the place. Can you tell us a bit about that and sort of the spirit of modernism in Samaritz, as opposed to perhaps one of your neighbours?
I had a great luck after a long battle to be able to make my home out of this, I would call it not Olympic stadium but an Olympic pavilion, which was the changing rooms and the home for the officials during the... And it is a Bauhaus building, which was built in a great hurry in 1927. And for that time, it was very, very contemporary. And of course, for me, it is very special because I am sort of always looking for the new. And of course, what is the new? What was the real start of modern times? That were the suprematists, that was the steel, and then the Bauhaus. Yeah, which really gave us the further, push the creativity further for all the arts we have seen then in the last end of the 20th century. They were really the beginning of these, forms where you don't look at style, you look at functionalism. Mm. Yeah, you look at a total different kind of beauty, a different kind of aesthetics. And so I was very, very lucky to have that house here and to be able to restore it, sort hopefully in the spirit of its original creator.
Sophie, I was just going to say, when you arrived, you sort of commented as well. You'd been to sort of other, Sophie's been to Stade and elsewhere, and said that, what's interesting also here is that you have the sense of, and even today, you sometimes refer to Samaritz as, is it a little city? Is it a village? What is it? And it is a mishmash. It's no alpine beauty in many ways, because there are so many different things going on architecturally. But I think, do you think that's also what makes it exciting as well, Rob, that it's not just all perfect chalets like you'd see elsewhere, that you can really see the march of time.
It is exciting. Obviously, mistakes have been made. And in the 50s and 60s, a lot of architectural mistakes have been made in a lot of cities. But I think the incredible beauty of the villages surrounding St. Moritz, with one of the most spectacular architecture you can see, where you see houses from outside with little windows, and they look actually quite not spectacular, and you come inside and you have these huge spaces which open, yeah, which is something you really won't see anywhere else, and it's very, very unique, yeah, to this valley, and yes, actually to this valley.
And in terms of, you know, where you see this place moving, I mean, you've talked about that spirit of Bauhaus modernism, those lines and that sort of sense of development. Where would you like to see St. Moritz in 10 years? And can you see it growing into a larger settlement?
I think that St. Moritz will grow. I think that the Olympic bid is very important. I think that really put St. Moritz on the map already in 1928. And I truly hope that we will manage to put forward at least a strong bid. And the town is evolving very strongly culturally over the last 10 years. I wouldn't have thought that this would have been possible, because people come here for different things, for holidays, with the family, for sports. And now you have seen 5-6 galleries opening here, world standard galleries. You have the Art Masters in the summer. There's the Festival of Jazz, a thing which I'm also involved with, which we do in the summer. So I think that St. Moritz is making a great effort to also play a much greater role in culture for the future.
And Ralph, finally, do you think there is a sense that, yeah, maybe some mistakes were made at a certain time, and the fathers of this town know that they really have to focus on, you know, the right architecture? We've seen, of course, the long-running story about the Hallenbad here. It's finally going up, which is great. Is there that recognition, do you think?
I think so. There is always something very difficult, because a really good architect, he says, I have to build like today, and I can't make a muck. Yeah, I can't do any neo, you know, sort of Alpine style. And especially the buildings here, they are done out of very practical reasons why one had to build like this, how one had to deal with this cold climate. Yeah. And to now make something new is very difficult. So it's a very, very fine line. There are a few very fine architects up here in the valley now, which I think bring very, very clever new interpretations, yeah, to Alpine architecture.
Great, Ralph Sachs. We're going to have to leave it there. Have a fantastic new year. I'm sure we'll see you over the coming days. You're listening to Midori House. Back in a moment. And that almost brings us to the end of this very first edition of Midori House from St. Moritz. Hopefully many, many more to come. And hopefully we'll be seeing Ralph Sachs many more times as well over the coming days. First impressions, now we're you're 3 hours into it, Sophie.
Fabulous. Chilly.
Yeah, chilly.
Amazing. I think we need Rolf back on. We need another round with Rolf.
Yeah, that could absolutely well happen. As we mentioned, we're going to be joined by our other colleagues coming up over the next few days. Andrew Tuck is on route, Marcus Hippie is en route, and of course a variety of our other colleagues as well. David Michon is in the wings, amongst many others, but we'll be chatting to all of them. I'm taking out for a lovely dinner right now.
Fabulous.
You're looking forward to that?
Definitely. Let's do it.
Today's show was produced by Alla John. Our technical team was Jack Phillips and Ben Jay back in London. And our production coordinator was Isabel Kayser. Sophie, your show is up next. The Entrepreneurs is coming up right after this. And of course, we're going to be back live from St. Moritz tomorrow, also at midday 1300 with The Briefing. And of course, Midori House is going to be back. But for me, Tyler Roulet.
And me, Sophie Grove.
Goodbye.